This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. If you're like me, you start your morning with coffee, maybe put WBUR on the radio, or maybe for sure, open up your laptop and start reading the news. And at the bottom of every news story on a website, say like boston.com and WBUR.org, in fact, there are comments, sometimes hundreds of them by 7 o'clock in the morning. Some of them can be very nasty, hateful, anonymous comments, and it can degenerate into a free-for-all where there are trolls who lurk behind their keyboards to hurl insults at one another. And after a while, you've just got to wonder, who are these people? Well, our guest today has had to duck some of the cyber mud that's been aimed his way before. And in Sunday's Boston Globe, Neil Swidey peeks over the parapet and looks into the world of anonymous commenters. You'll find his article, 2 Cents in the Digital Age, in this weekend's Globe magazine. Neil Swidey, welcome to Radio Boston.
Great to be here, Meghna.
Also with us today is our very own Andrew Phelps. He's reporter for WBUR.org. He's also one of the forces behind the website in general. And he deals a lot with our listening and reading public. Hey there, Andrew.
Hey, Meghna, and henceforth, I'd like to be known as SeltzDude25.
SeltzDude25, yeah, okay, that's how you. We're going to refer to you from today onwards. But listeners, we'd also love to read your online comments today. Andrew is here in the studio with his laptop, constantly hitting that refresh button. You'll hear the clicks. So go to WBUR.org/Boston and click on Radio Boston and leave a comment there. And please, even though we're talking about anonymous and hateful comments, do be civil. You can also give us a call if you want at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Okay, Neil, so let's just start off by this basic question. All of us who've ventured out there into cyberland and, you know, read articles and we see the hundreds of comments, it's a pretty wild world out there, but what got you interested in really trying to find out who these people are?
I think, you know, when I write a story, as you say, I do look at the comments, and when I read stories, I look at the comments, and sometimes you do find these great gems where people are adding new layers to the stories that are out there. But increasingly, the tenor on a lot of the threads of comments are kind of nasty, or it can really turn. It can pivot in a strange way. And so I was fascinated by that and wanted to know what motivates the people to do it. And I also wanted to know, even for the people who aren't nasty, the people who are pretty responsible, what's the appeal for spending hours and hours on the day sort of opining about every topic out there?
Well, let's describe a little bit about what you're talking about for maybe people who don't spend as much time as we obsessively do online. But you describe, for example, there was a story recently on Boston.com about President Obama's aunt, I believe,
right,
who was here in Boston as an illegal immigrant but lived in public housing. And so that article went up at about 2 p.m., you said.
Right.
And within 3 minutes, there were a ton of comments, or
right,
many comments.
Right. And the first few were just kind of polite comments about people giving their opinion on it. And then quickly, it degenerated. And I like to look at, I picked that issue for a reason, because that had all these different strains of contentious topics out there. Obama, race, immigration, birthers, all these things kind of together. And that was the mother load of tripwires, really, for online comments out there. And in that case, the comments got so vicious and off track that the moderators, the mods on Boston.com, actually had to shut off the comments.
Within about an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's very fast. So what is the policy on Boston.com for allowing comments on? Is it on as soon as I press send, it's going to just show up on the website?
Basically, the comments are not pre-screened because we get thousands of comments all over every corner of the website, on the message boards, on the, you know, the theme forums, and on all the article comments. But there's an abuse report function on that, and our moderators receive all those abuse reports. And if people are repeat offenders, they're shut off. If they just go over the line on something in ways that the mods determine, they're turned off or that comment is removed.
And Andrew Phelps, what's our policy here at WBUR.org?
Well, we don't pre-screen either. We will remove comments that break the rules. And the rules in the most simplest form on WBUR.org are stay on topic, be civil, and be brief. Of course, we have more rules if you want to get into detail that ask people not to feed the trolls, which is actually a policy that we derived from NPR that was somewhat novel last year, which is if somebody lobs an insult or an accusation, just don't talk to them, or you're just as responsible as they are for contributing to that behavior. as far as anonymity goes, we don't explicitly require that you use your real name, but we do encourage it.
And for in terms of total transparency, have we ever shut down comment threads here at BUR.org?
Oh, yes, we have.
For commentary that just got out of hand?
Yes, there are threads that become so much about what an individual commenter said that's controversial or so personal and not about the story in question that there's no more constructive dialogue happening and we have to shut it down. We don't have to do that a whole lot, thankfully, but it has happened.
And listeners, just as a reminder, you can send us a comment right now at WBUR.org/Boston. Click on Radio Boston. Send us a comment. And like I said, Andrew's got his laptop here ready to roll.
And we've got a comment already from Angry Internet Commenter who says, I hate those hateful, angry internet commenters. They should all die a fiery death.
Sometimes they're a little tongue-in-cheek, which I'll take over the out-and-out hate any day. But Neil, let me ask you. So you took a close look at who was commenting on Boston.com. And we should say it's probably one of the sites that gets the most traffic in the state. Right. And you found that there are the trolls, as Andrew was talking about, but then there are also these people that you refer to as heavy users.
Right.
And they're a special brand in and of themselves. So tell us about one of those heavy users.
Well, so the heavy users, I borrowed that term from the fast food industry, Burger King, McDonald's. They study their heavy users to find out what motivates them because they're their bread and butter, the people who are going to McDonald's 4 or 5 times a week. I looked at our heavy users, the people who are on hours and hours every day posting comments, because there's this interesting phenomenon on these social networking sites and on social communities where it's called the 99-1 rule, where eventually 90% of the people or so are lurkers. They're watching, they're reading the comments, but never really posting. 9% are occasionally posting, and the 1% are the heavy users. They're posting constantly. So just because someone is posting a lot doesn't mean they're irresponsible or they're a troll. And I found some people who, both liberals and conservatives, who are heavy users, who post often, but generally are fairly responsible types. And I was interested in kind of what motivates them.
And one of them in particular, he goes by the handle Xenophonic, I believe.
See, yes.
You got a picture of him, which people will be able to see this weekend when they read the Globe magazine. But to me, he looks like the smoking man from the X-Files. But he's a pretty interesting guy.
Fascinating guy and a nice guy. I mean, he's sort of, irrespective of his politics, he's a guy who sort of takes his role in the community seriously, and he doesn't hide behind his anonymity. In fact, his name, which people think is his view on illegal immigration, which is one of his pet topics, is his name. He's Albanian of descent, and his name is Xenophone. So Xenophonic is his version of that. But what fascinated me about the heavy users I spoke with was the degree to which they watch and measure their days based on how many recommends they get from other people. Recommend is the function where other commenters say, hey, I like that, and give you a thumbs up. Yeah. Or even if I disagree with you, you should read this.
Well, Xenophonic actually was willing to give you his real name. He's Stanley Talibak, I believe.
Yes.
And apparently he gets up at 5 a.m. every day, has a little bit of breakfast, and the first thing he does is get online to comment on the day's news, particularly immigration, as you said. But I was fascinated how by the number of recommends, as you said, that he got is the thing that really keeps him coming back. I mean, he's building friends and community online that he doesn't seem to have elsewhere in his actual real social life.
Well, it's interesting. It is a kind of a virtual community that he's part of. And he is also, as much as he fancies himself, I think, kind of a critic of nonsense that he sees out there and kind of a lone wolf in a way, he really does crave that community and the endorsement of that community. As he told me, I feel good when people give me a thumbs up. And I found a liberal poster, heavy user, Kurt Larson, who, again, looks at that same metric. So he judges his day based on those recommends. At least he judges his day on the site.
Mm-hmm. Andrew Phillips, this word community has already come up a couple of times, and it seems to me that it's one of the things that keeps people coming back when they start getting that kind of feedback from their fellow commenters, et cetera. So how is it that this sense of community plays into the tenor of comments that we see on websites from WBUR.org or all the way to Boston.com or any other website?
Well, you know, we only turned on comments at BUR.org about a year ago, which is really, really recent in the world of web. And we were terrified that we would be inundated with garbage. And I'm just amazed by the high quality of these discussions. WBUR.org readers are very constructive, often use their full names, including middle initials, respond to the stories in question. That said, we're dealing with a lot less volume. WBUR.org has something like hundreds of thousands of viewers a month, whereas Boston.com has many millions of viewers a month. So I suspect a lot of those readers on our site are listeners and feel a sense of community with one another, feel a sense of responsibility to each other, to respect each other. I suspect that as our site grows and reaches more people in more states around the country, a lot of that civility will start to erode, and I'm worried about that.
You know, Neil Swiety, I have to say, in reading your articles, terrific, but you also very assiduously avoided talking about whether or not most of the commenters who were bringing that extra heat and passion, whether they're conservative or liberal. And again, from my very casual just observation of some of the stories on Boston.com, there are some that seem to attract particular passion and vociferous commentary from folks around the state who seem to have a more conservative bent. I mean, would you say that's true because maybe the Globe is one way and for a source of common ire or a common target for people who feel that they're like, you know, proud conservatives in an otherwise blue sea of Massachusetts?
I think that could possibly be it. Generally, the conservative movement has been better and more organized nationally at marshaling this medium of the web. In fact, there's issues that I didn't even have space to get into about, you know, commenters for hire, essentially political plants that go on different websites and do that. In the same way a newspaper or letter to the editor in years past would have these sort of letters that would sound vaguely familiar from different names of different people coming. So that aspect is there. We certainly have lots of conservatives, probably more conservatives than in terms of these heavy users than liberals. But the liberals are strong and a combative presence as well too. For some people, it's that back and forth between the two sides that really draws them.
You know, Meghna, we've talked a lot about the value of anonymity versus not allowing anonymity. We've got an interesting comment from Mariah on our site. I'm an anonymous commenter on mostly political sites. My business partner asked me to keep my political blogging separate from the business, which I think is fair. We compete for government grants, and my political views have mostly no bearing on our work, except for my advocacy of stem cell research and evolution, perhaps, which could have been a problem in the previous administration. So this is a person with legitimate points of view who doesn't want to hide, but who doesn't want to encumber her business partner's business.
Well, but Neil Swiety, I mean, in fact, a somewhat similar case you outlined in your piece about a judge who was making comments on cases that she was adjudicating, but doing so anonymously. And the conflict of interest there seems to be pretty apparent and strong.
Yeah, and for the record, the judge claims that she didn't actually make that someone may have hacked into her and her daughter may have made some of the comments. But it gets to the root of the issue, which is anonymity is a problem because anonymity on the web really doesn't exist anymore. And I try to point that out as well, that with all of our information getting sliced and diced by credit card companies and Facebook and other places on there, you really can't be anonymous anymore. As Andrew said, I think there's a good point for the discussion. Some people have legitimate reasons why they don't want their name attached to that publicly, but that the websites themselves really are better off often if they know who those people are so that they can police it better. But then that puts them in a bind, as happened in Cleveland with this judge, where the website became aware of the connection between the judge and the online comments and exposed her, and then she sued them.
Well, I mean, let's be honest here, because this question of whether or not to maintain anonymous comments is a really big one for media outlets and for media and news websites. As you point out in your piece, there are a number of news organizations that are moving away from that. But I'm wondering, Andrew Phelps, are there other models? Because we've either kind of been considering like anonymous, okay, or not, and everyone has to give their full name. Is there some kind of in-between maybe that might work to both maintain that sense of community but also increase the responsibility amongst people who are engaging online?
there's a blogger, Derek Powazek, that I've been reading lately, who writes a lot about how newspapers can improve their comment systems. And one thing he suggests is allow anonymous comments, but require an account. Require someone to go through the hoops of putting in a real email address, getting an account with a password that they have to log into. It will kind of raise the bar and deter those trolls from wasting everybody's time.
By the way, we do that at Boston.com now.
Is that a requirement then?
It's a requirement for any new person. So there are people who are grandfathered before they had to do that, but everyone... I think within the past year has to do that.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, another suggestion that this blogger makes is for the news organization itself to participate, to put some humanity into the conversation, to encourage reporters to respond to commenters so that commenters don't feel like they're yelling at the television screen. Of course, a lot of the stories on Boston.com, I don't know how the reporters would ever have that kind of time, but it's something we encourage our reporters to do here.
So the sense that maybe you're actually, your comment is reaching somebody, a human being, might make you think twice about what you're saying and how you're saying it. Well, it's a really interesting idea. Andrew Phelps, reporter for WBUR.org, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks, Meghna.
And Neil Swidey, staff writer for the Boston Globe magazine and author of an article that's going to appear in this Sunday. It's called Two Cents in the Digital Age. Thank you so much for being with us as well.
It's great to be here. Thanks.
Well, we always welcome your comments on WBUR.org/Boston. And on our new listener comment line, it's a little harder to be anonymous that way because you have to use your own voice. But here's what we've already heard from you on this week's stories.
First, message.
Hello, my name is Adam from Rhode Island. I was calling about the Gates versus Crowley incident. I wanted to point out that perhaps racism did play a part in this particular confrontation, but rather on the part of Gates. I wonder how it might have played out differently had the officer in question been a black man.
Hi, my name is David, and I'm calling from Westminster. Yes, technology failed in the case of the disaster in the Gulf, but really what's more important here is that what really failed here was management. We know how to do these things carefully. And we just need to pay attention to what we're doing while we're doing them. And the government can help with that. Thanks.
Hi, my name is Steve Brain, and I live in the South End. I was just listening to the program about the post-gay Boston. I was horrified last year when they took the word gay out of gay pride. The love that cannot speak its name has come back, and we're doing it to ourselves.
Hi, Meghna. It's Roy from Coventry, Rhode Island, calling. I wanted to reply to your story on wildlife and wild animals. I live in a semi-rural area. I don't really have a problem with wild animals. I keep my property very neat and clean. They were here long before we were, and I kind of like to keep things as comfortable for them as I would like it for me.
Hello, this is Steve Langdon from the town of Harvard, Massachusetts. My question is whether or not there is a legal or humane way whereby I could kill any coyotes that up in my backyard to defend my indoor-outdoor cats. I know some people are going to find it distasteful to think of me killing a coyote. So be it.
Well, Steve, so be it, but only kind of, because according to the Massachusetts Division of Fisheries and Wildlife, homeowners can kill wildlife if the wildlife is causing property damage. It would have to be done humanely and reported to the environmental police, and it would be subject to other state laws if, for example, you damage or attack an endangered species or if you use firearms. So beware, because these laws generally apply to farmers in terms of killing wildlife and not cat owners, Steve. But to leave your comments, call our listener line at 617-353-1137. Coming up, we delve into the debate over child custody in Massachusetts. There's pending legislation on Beacon Hill that seeks to change the way judges award custody, and it's supported by a particular group of fathers. Join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.